Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Monday, kicking off your work week, September the 18th, 2017. It is 9:18:17. There you go. 15 minutes past the hour, joined in studio by Terry Tackett today. And it's going to be a current events day with you on the toll-free line. So get your dialing fingers ready because that's what we want to see. Terry, how was your weekend?
Not bad. Not bad. Yours?
You know, it wasn't bad. I enjoyed it. I was out at the air show on Saturday at the WWGH Media Pavilion, so that was a lot of fun. Yeah. A lot of people, 2,000, 3,000 people probably out there, I would say.
A lot of people taking plane rides and...
I tell you what, the helicopter never stopped.
Oh, really?
Helicopter was the star of Saturday when I was out there, and Charlie was there both days as the MC, so it was a great time had by all.
That's good.
Now,
that's good.
Here's what I thought we would do. I thought we would start off talking about the statues,
sure.
Because for some reason, this is the story that will not die, and last week when I opened up the phone lines on Wednesday, I believe it was, we were getting a lot of phone calls again on the statues, and we ran out of time and did not have time to finish all the stories that we did because for some reason the phone was ringing busy. But, okay, should the Robert E. Lee statue come down, period?
Boy, it's a tough one.
Is it a tough one?
I mean, you're going to have people that says, you know, he really wasn't, you know, he was more for the North than he was the South and vice versa, even though.
Well, I don't know how he could be more for the North.
Because what, didn't he start off as a soldier for the North or?
He fought in wars that America fought, but not after the Civil War had started.
Okay. I thought I might have had my people mixed up there for a minute, but...
No. Robert E. Lee was the leader of the Confederate Army.
Yeah. I just thought that one time somebody said something about he actually had some ties to the North or something, and that he really didn't believe in...
Yeah, people have said that, and that's okay, but I think what you do and what you say are two different things.
Right, but the ultimate result was that, you know, he...
He led the Confederate Army,
sure.
So at some point he agreed.
And I mean, you know, I guess based on that, I'd say yes. You know, it would need to...
Well, I tell you what, we are getting a call here, so we will see... Actually, you know what? We're going to take this off the air.
Okay.
Grab that really, really quick. We'll be right back with much more here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
Yeah, he's on the air.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the voices you want to hear. Marianne Michaels reading a poem by Nan Britton, the mother of the daughter of President Warren G. Harding.
And it's called Her Eyes by Nan Britton. Sometimes her eyes are blue as deep sea blue, and calm as water stilted at evenfall. I see not quite my child in these blue eyes, but him whose soul shines wondrously through her. Serene and unafraid he was, and knew how to dispel the fears in other hearts. Meeting an anxious gaze, all tranquility, these are her father's eyes. Sometimes her eyes are blue, the azure blue of an October sky on mountaintops. I do not see my child in these blue eyes. They are the eyes of him whose spirit glowed with happiness of soul alone, which lies far deeper than the depths of bluest eyes, whose smile a thing of joy it was to see. These eyes, this smile, are his. Sometimes her eyes are of a tired gray blue, filled with the sadness of an age-old world. And then again, my child's not in these eyes. These are the eyes of one whom grief assailed, whom disappointment crushed with its great weight. Around his head a halo memory casts, reflecting that refiner's fire which purged him clean and made him what he was. Sometimes, in child amaze and wonder blue, her baby eyes are lifted up to mine. These only are the eyes she brought with her, and so I fold her close within my arms and talk of dolls and stars and mother love, for well I know that pitifully soon she will be grown, and then her eyes will hold only the deeper lights his own eyes knew.
Ah, you ought to get a job reading books, Marianne. That was very good.
That's great. Yeah.
Thank you.
That is the introduction to The President's Daughter.
WWG Radio 107.1 FM, the voices you want to hear. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
Hey, Scott Spears back with you here on this Monday, September the 18th, 20 minutes past the hour. And yesterday, the wrestling world and broadcasting world, and we and Marion felt a great loss as legendary wrestling manager, broadcaster Bobby the Brain Heenan died at age 73 after a long, long battle with throat cancer. Bobby came to Marion in 2004 to star in the Night of a Thousand Stars. I was honored to co-host along with the Brain that night. I even got to wear his red sequin jacket that he wore on primetime wrestling for so many years. And I was with Bobby for 3 days, and he was just as funny and as real and as wonderful as you would expect him to be, the greatest manager of all time. Joining us here to remember Bobby today is a gentleman who is a great manager in his own right, worked behind the scenes in the WWF, then as it was called, during Bobby's tenure, and also worked with him in WCW later on down the line. Four Horsemen Acclaim, the legendary manager, J.J. Dillon. J.J., how are you?
Fine, Scott. Kind of mixed emotions. Happy to talk to you, but saddened, too, that it has to be on the occasion of the passing of Bobby the Brain Heenan, who you so aptly put it, and I have said it virtually every interview that I've ever done, that Bobby Heenan is the greatest manager of all time, and he set the bar by which the rest of us were measured, and just this didn't come as a total shock because everybody knew that Bobby had some serious health issues. But every time that I saw him, regardless of what the news reports were saying about his health, his spirit never dwindled. He always had that smile, and just he didn't allow it to define what his life was about. And it's cancer is a horrible, horrible disease, and hopefully someday, we'll find a cure. But Bobby fought it and fought it hard for a long time, and saddened. I was away for the weekend in North Carolina for Modern Vintage Wrestling in Gibsonville, returning to Gibsonville, and really had a great time, and just enjoyed going back on the road and being in the dressing room with so many of the young talent, and having such a good feeling about the state of the business. And then upon arriving home back here in Delaware, reading the news that Bobby had passed, it was a sad day.
JJ, to me, unfortunately, a lot of great wrestlers, managers have left us. Bobby Heenan's a little different. He is in a pantheon all by himself. Like you say, greatest manager of all time. I say the same thing. But he was funny. He was big in every company he was with. He's really on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling. Would you not agree?
Absolutely. And he'd have the number one spot, as far as I'm concerned. And every time I was ever around Bobby, it wasn't like Bobby was a persona that when the light came on, the red light came on for TV, that he became something that he wasn't. If you were around Bobby privately or on a social occasion, the Bobby that you saw on TV was the real Bobby Heenan. He just had was a funny, funny guy. Naturally, he didn't have to work at it. It came, very easy to him. And to say the greatest manager of all time really doesn't do a justice to him, because Bobby was so much more than just a wrestling manager. My favorite commentating team of all time was when Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon were teamed up. And I thought they were like, they gave the appearance of being oil and water, but they really complimented each other, and Bobby would say outrageous things, and Monsoon would call him on it, but it was entertaining. It was something that you never got tired of, and And the other aspect of Bobby was when he was ever called upon to put the tights on to go in the ring, he was as good as anybody I ever saw. And I remember the late Nick Bockwinkle telling me that up in Minneapolis, where Nick spent a good part of his career, and he was up there with Ray Stevens, and Bobby was their manager, and he made the point, Nick made the point, that if anything happened in terms of coming to an event, whether one of them had trouble getting there because of transportation, or if there was an injury situation, that Bobby had the ability to put the tights on and go in and replace one of the top guys in one of the great teams of all time, and the fans wouldn't be disappointed, because Bobby had that kind of ability to go in the ring and basically do anything and do everything. So when you say the greatest manager of all time, Bobby was so much more than that.
You know, JJ, when Bobby came here, he came in June of 2004. He had just been inducted into the Hall of Fame 3 months prior, during WrestleMania 20. And it was a great speech. Anybody can go watch it on YouTube. But there's a point in that speech where he says the only thing he was missing that night was that Monsoon wasn't there. And he actually choked up. They were great on camera, but they were also great off camera.
Yep. And you know, Bobby, like I say, in a social setting, was the same Bobby Heenan. He was so funny and entertaining, and it's not like he tried to do it. That was Bobby. He was that way all the time. And, you know, when the cancer struck him, it was so devastating. I remember after, you know, reading reports, you know, that he'd been battling it for some time and that he'd had surgery and the jaw replacement had been rejected. I mean, so many things that somebody not as strong as a Bobby Heenan could allow that to define their life. And I remember when I saw him after several of the surgeries, and I hadn't seen him for a while, just, you know, read the reports, and we were in Atlanta at one of the fan festivals, and I asked somebody, I think Tony Schiavone was out in the hall, and I said, is Bobby in there? He said, yeah, Bobby's in their room. And I remember kind of taking a bunch of deep breaths and kind of pausing a couple minutes before I went in, because the last thing that I wanted to do was to have shock show on my face and have Bobby see that. And I was worried about how I was going to be able to handle the moment. And I remember walking into the room, and out of my peripheral vision, I see Bobby and Cindy sitting, you know, off to the left. And I kind of avoided making eye contact because I just wanted to get in the room and kind of, you know, see the lay of the room. And then finally, you know, when I turned, I was two-thirds of the way across the room, and Bobby made eye contact with me, and his eyes lit up, and he was like a kid seeing Santa Claus for the first time. He was motioning me, hurry, hurry, come over here, and he's patting the chair next to him. And it, like, took all of the self-imposed pressure that I put on my self about how I was going to handle that moment. You know, Bobby overcame it all for me, and he came over as being more excited to see me than I was to see him. And it was obviously the opposite. I was so excited to be him, and I didn't want him to see anything in my face that reflected, you know, the battle that he was fighting. And I sat down next to him, and he was the same Bobby Heenan, joking and kidding around, and it was difficult for me to understand a lot of the times what he was saying. And Cindy, his wife, had been around him, you know, for so long that she understood immediately what he was trying to say. And he would say something, and I would look, trying to understand his words, because he had some trouble speaking. And she would say, "Well, Bobby's telling you," and then, yes, you know, he would acknowledge, yes, that's what he was saying, and I understood. And then we carried on a conversation, and the one thing I remember was he pulled pictures out of his wallet of his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren. And I talked to Mike Tenay sometime after that. I was at an event up in New Jersey, and Mike was there, and Gene Okerlund was there, and Mike Tenay had just spent like a week or so with Bobby right prior to that, just spent a lot of time with him. And he said that really, in spite of all the physical adversity, what kept Bobby going was his those great-grandchildren were his whole life. And that was his, because I heard the stories that Bobby couldn't swallow, couldn't drink any liquids, that he had to have his mouth swabbed to keep it moist, and that he was had been fed for like 2 years through a stomach feeding tube. And I'm thinking, God, the Bobby that I knew just lit up a room, and how does a guy like that deal with that kind of adversity? And Mike Tenay's explanation was that those grandchildren are what motivated Bobby to get out of bed every day, and that Cindy was there to support him. So he'd been through so much, and we could talk for hours about what he contributed to our profession and the impact that he had. And everybody knows that. And that's why it's like to say, I say the greatest manager of all time, he's got that first spot on Mount Rushmore, but it seems like you should say so much more because it is Bobby Heenan. There's only one of him, and there'll never be another one.
Here's what I want to do, JJ. I want you to tell us where his place in wrestling is and how you're going to remember him as a friend. But what I want to do first, we have a little extended clip, because to not play something Bobby did for the audience who maybe is not familiar with Bobby would be wrong. With the permission of WWE Classics, this is a little bit of an extended clip. This is from his time in WCW. And to set up the clip here, what's going on, Monday Nitro is the hottest show on television. It's December. The NWO has taken over Nitro, and they've thrown the WCW announcers out. The first part of this clip is Bobby Heenan joining the NWO. You'll get the picture. And then the following week, when WCW had won at Starrcade and taken back over Nitro, this is Bobby Heenan at his best in WCW. Take a listen.
Here, right. Look over here, see if the camera can pick this guy up.
Right.
Oh, Heenan's coming out to throw us off the set.
Okay, let's just see about that.
Bobby Heenan making his way to the broadcast booth.
A little something from
come on, Bobby.
A little something from the Arnold Palmer collection.
You want to do what?
I want to talk business.
Now grab a microphone if you want to talk.
Talk business. What are you doing here?
You want to talk? Grab a microphone so they can hear you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Arnold.
You're going to throw us off the set, Bobby?
I want to talk business. I want to talk business to you. Now, Mr. Bischoff, I've admired you since the day I came to work here. The reason I left the World Wrestling Federation was because of you. I wanted to work for a man like you with your initiative and your brains. I mean, you're the Donald Trump of wrestling. You make Steven Spielberg look like a guy running 8mm films in a garage someplace. I can see the NWO, the direction they're taking right now. I've always been with a winner. I've always been a winner. I've got to be with Nitro. I've got to be with NWO Nitro, because you guys are the winners right now. I can see that right now. And this means more to me than anything. This means more to me than wrestling, more than managing. This is my broadcasting career. And I can see the direction you're going in now. You're number one. I got to be a part of that. I got to be a part of being number one. That's just the way I am. And I'm asking you, could you consider me for this job? I mean, I can't live up to the expectations that you have of people, because you're so far above her.
Shut up, will you? Yeah.
Thank you.
Giving me a headache. Oh, Kevin, you got to take a break, right? I mean, you had a couple bottles.
And you're the biggest guy I know in this sport.
Is he the giant?
He's the giant. He's a giant.
You're in.
You know, anybody.
The other guy looks like a jockey at the Kentucky Derby. You're the giant. And you, we go back a long way. I don't think I ever managed anybody with more desire and a better competitor than you.
And let me ask you this, Bobby Heenan. Does Sting not deserve to have his neck broken by Hulk Hogan?
Yes.
Very good.
Anybody that's done what that man has done to Hulk Hogan deserves it.
Bobby.
Hulk Hogan and I haven't always been agreeing on things, but, under misunderstandings, we can settle.
Bobby!
Bobby, you can take my chair. I'm going to go in the back and
sit down,
will you? Horse or something.
Sit down, will you? Yeah. Don't hug me. Just sit down and put the headset on. And
fans, we are back with you live on WCW Monday Nitro, and we are beginning our second hour of what has been a very exciting program. It's going to be Mike Tenay, a two-man broadcast team because of the accents. What do you want?
What do you mean, what do I want?
What are you doing here? I mean, after last week, it's very apparent to Mike today, to me, to the world, whose side you're on, the loser's side.
No, you don't understand something. While you sat out here and you sat out here and everybody sat out here and they dimmed the lights, they tore down the set, they beat up people, they used ball bats, they did whatever they wanted to, no one did anything. I'm the only one, I'm talking to you, I'm the only one that bit the bullet. I'm the one that ran into the fiery house and rescued the cats. Somebody had to take charge here. You didn't help me, nobody helped me. So I did this WCW.
Hold on, you're trying to say you did this for all of us? You, for the first time in your life, you didn't do something for your own hide?
No, I went into their pit. I went into their fiery den. I sacrificed myself for WCW and the tradition of professional wrestling. And all I expect is to be greeted with open arms.
You mean tonight?
Thank you, Tony. Good idea.
Holy Moses.
You gotta be kidding.
You are the weasel. You just walk back in here. Now you're a part of WCW.
Thank you. Roll it.
You have no idea where we're going, do you?
Doesn't matter. I'm back on Nitro.
You're back on Nitro.
And I'm back home. They say you can't go home. I've come back home. I'm home again. And it feels good to be home.
He's a front runner.
Boy, you are. So you're going to join us for the second hour.
Yes.
Had the NWO prevailed last night, whose side would you have been on? Would you have been out here with Bischoff and Rude?
Tony, I'd have been with you. I'd have been with WCW. I did what I had to do for the people here at WCW.
All right. The weasel's back. You're too much. This is the same old weasel back at his own annex. And you just plopped yourself down here.
Catchy tune, huh?
Only one Bobby Heenan. He played the weasel so well. JJ.
That's vintage Bobby Heenan, and great for you to allow us all to share in those memories. I mean, like you said, there was only one Bobby Heenan, and he, you know, he set the bar for the rest of us, and he was so good. There wasn't a situation that he could step into that he couldn't handle. He was the great. Just to say he was the greatest just doesn't seem, there should be other words to describe Bobby Heenan. This is you know, it's a tragic loss, and I look at today as, you know, not a day of sadness, because if Bobby was able to talk to us, he would want this day to be a celebration of his career, and that's really what it should be.
The interesting thing, JJ, is Bobby, because of this terrible cancer, was not able to be active in the wrestling world for more than 10 years, but nobody ever forgot him. He's one of those guys who you pop in the tape and he's timeless. I guess that's the word. His work is timeless.
Absolutely. And, you know, he would go to these appearances and, you know, as his health declined, you know, the fans never forgot him. That's who they came to see. And if I was somewhere and Bobby was there, the first person that I went to was, I went to Bobby because, yes, I was there. It was a business arrangement. But a big part of it for me was I was there to see Bobby and just to have whatever time that I could have with him. And he never got tired of telling the stories and being Bobby Heenan, whether it was as a wrestler, as a manager, as a commentator with Gorilla Monsoon. Hey, Bobby could do it all. And this is, it's a terrible loss.
JJ, how will you remember him as a friend, somebody who knew him well?
Yeah, I made some trips where, you know, we would be on an airplane sitting together where, you know, we wouldn't have a lot of distractions. And then, you know, he would talk, personal. I know there was a time where he found out that he had a brother that he wasn't aware of, and he wanted to go find, you know, the history and the personal side of Bobby that you hardly ever saw, because it was like Bobby always had you laughing, and it wasn't because he tried to make you laugh. It was just Bobby being Bobby. So everything was always laugh and a good time. But underneath it was really a loving, caring person. He was a loving, caring father. And Cindy was always there by his side, and especially as the cancer took more and more of its toll and it was difficult for Bobby to communicate, she was there to help you know, verbalize, you know, if somebody wasn't sure what Bobby was trying to say. And he loved being around the people. He loved being around the fans because that's what he fed off. That's where his greatness came from being around the fans, whether it was a commentator with Monsoon or as a manager. Just, you know, I don't know how you say it, just like you say, a Mount Rushmore, that first is Bobby Heenan. And you could line up, you know, I always say that Gary Hart never got the credit he was due because he never got to play on the big stage in New York. So when I look at managers, I look at Bobby as number one, who set the bar by which all of us were measured. And then right behind him was Gary Hart and, of course, you know, Jim Cornette. And there have been so many great managers, but if you ask any manager or any wrestling fan who was the greatest manager of all time, that there's not even a pause or you know, thinking about it before they speak. It's Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Bobby the Brain Heenan. And tonight, I'm sure, on Monday Night Raw, there will be a video package tribute to the legendary Brain, as well he should. Well deserved.
Yes, absolutely. He, you know, it's the fans deserve it. And for Bobby's family, and I'm just happy that you're doing this today and doing a tribute, and that I've had a chance to call in, and because Bobby was a friend too, and he's been through a lot, and maybe this was a blessing that you know, that he not suffer anymore.
And he lives forever on DVD and videotape. Thank goodness.
Absolutely.
Thank you, JJ. One of the great guys in the wrestling world, JJ Dillon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, Terry, this is kind of where we were going to go today, remembering Bobby Heenan, because he did come to Marion. There was a tie there. And what was your take on JJ's memories of the Brain and hearing that clip, WWE Classic from 1997?
Yeah, that was a pretty accurate depiction of how I thought of what I thought of Bobby Heenan also, too. I mean, he was just one of those guys that he just had it, you know. I mean, he could just, well, the time that I seen him here, he was just, I don't know, he could just light up a room, you know, when he just kind of took over the room.
Funny,
too.
Yeah, funny guy. And one more clip, it's not even a minute long.
Okay.
But from 1999, we talk about his relationship with Gorilla Monsoon. Gorilla passed away in 99 at the age of 66. And Bobby was not working for the company at that point. He was working for the opposition company, WCW Nitro. And he said at the top of the program, and Gorilla had never been in WCW, and he said, I'm going to pay tribute to my friend Gorilla Monsoon. So here's that tribute back from October of 1999.
We start with tonight's action, Brain. There's something we both, but particularly you, have to say about our longtime friend Gorilla Monsoon.
A Gorilla will be sadly missed. He was one big tough man. He was a decent, honest man. And we're all going to miss him very much. And you know the pearly gates in heaven?
Yeah.
It's now going to be called the Gorilla Position. Goodbye, my friend.
Very well said, Bobby the Brain Heenan.
He was one of the greats. And Gorilla was, he and Gorilla together, just too funny.
Oh.
Too funny.
They reminded me of kind of like a Laurel and Hardy. I mean,
well, I just Abbott and Costello all the way. Yeah. They had it. And we may have some more tributes to Bobby Heenan as time goes on. But
he deserves a lot of.
Oh, he's so. I when he came to Marion, we had such fun together.
That was fun.
We had such fun together. Yeah. There's some things about that trip I can't even talk about. Because he was such a good guy. Gone yesterday at age 73 after a. Oh, my gosh, 16-year battle with throat cancer.
I was going to say 10. I didn't know.
16 years, 2001 to 2017.
I'll be darned. Man.
And at the end, the jawbone was gone. He really had a long road.
Yeah,
long road.
He did. Rest well, my friend.
Rest well, Bobby Heenan. The Brain. We will never forget him. 740-383-9944. But
you can just feel the impact that he, like J.J. Dillon, you know, because he was far more than just a manager or a commentator.
Announcer.
I mean, a lot of people now have kind of taken the persona kind of.
I don't. But you know, nobody can do it.
Right.
You can't copy Bobby Heenan. You just can't do
it. But, I mean, his impact just on you know, is tremendous, you know.
Oh, that's why I say tonight on the wrestling program, I'm sure the tribute will be paid high and large to Bobby Heenan, because he's right there with Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper and everybody else.
Pioneer
in the wrestling world.
Yep.
Now, back to our statue conversation.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, you were flim-flamming on the statues.
I was, but, I mean, I the more I think about it, I guess, is that, you know, it probably really is offensive to people, you know. I mean, you know, a certain group of people, and, you know, everyone's going to say about taking this and that away and stuff, and I just think that there's some things. I mean, like, for example, Harding, obviously you're not going to take the guy's gravesite away. I mean, even was Harding a great president? I mean, in some people's eyes, no. I mean, but I don't think he did anything. Well, I mean, he had a fair, but I don't think he did anything with a, you know, like with a group of people. You know what I mean? Like those guys were fighting.
Well, the question is, do they come down? Should they come down?
Yeah.
So you think they
should? I do. Like I say, I mean, you know, I've talked to some people, you know, some people about it and things, and it's, you know, it's offensive to them whenever they think about the history of it, you know, and stuff like that. And
that's certainly true. I think one of the biggest problems with the statues, to be honest, is that they are offending people. And if they're offending people, then we have to take notice.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody has an opinion, give us a call, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. We certainly would love to talk to you about this. But I don't understand, why is it such a big deal if they come down? Because it obviously is offensive to people that they're there. So what is the reason that people fight so hard to keep them up?
Well, that, and then I had a question too, and I don't know if this is kind of off the beaten path or not, but why were they put up there in the first place?
Well, it depends on who you talk to.
I mean, the people that erected the statue, what, did they consider those people a hero or a vital part of American history? I mean, how were they allowed to erect that?
Well, I think it came in the 1920s, and I think it was the South wanting to uphold separate but equal at that time.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. I just was wondering, because
the statues were not put up in their time.
Mm.
So you have to start with that.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I didn't know. That's the part that I was, because I was going to say, if they're so offensive, why were they even allowed to be put up in the first place?
Well, in the South, then, you could do what you wanted to, but I think the people living in those areas at that time wanted them to be up, but now they want them to come down. And I think that's what you go by. You go by the people who live there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I was just, you know, I totally understand your point. I just was thinking, you know, that when they were first constructed or whatever, why didn't they, you know, why wasn't something done then? But it makes sense now, of course, you know, back in that time that, you know, that...
It's a strange thing, and I guess time will go on and on and on, but we're having riots in St. Louis yesterday.
Boy,
because people get acquitted.
My goodness.
Has there ever been a time in one of these racially motivated cases where the cops were prosecuted?
The only thing I'm thinking, was there a couple of them in that Rodney King that, or did they all get acquitted?
No, I think they all got acquitted.
They all got acquitted, okay.
That's what caused the L.A. riots
of 92. I thought maybe one of them. Yeah, I don't remember any of them. That would have been the only one that...
Well, why do you think that is? Why do you think, I mean, yeah, we're not saying the police officers are wrong, we're not saying the people who get killed are wrong, but why do you think it always comes down that way?
I just think that it comes down that way because nobody will, you know, nobody will speak out on behalf of them, you know, the cops won't come out and say, you know, we have one or two bad cops, but this is not our department. It would take somebody like that, you know, to say something like that.
Well, do you think that will ever happen?
I don't think it'll ever happen, but that's what, you know.
So in that type of situation, what do you do?
Boy, I don't know, because, I mean, You couldn't even really have the trial anywhere else because, I mean, it's all over the news and everything. I don't know what you do.
Well, it's a strange situation, and I guess time will tell.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's just a weird dynamic, you know, that I don't know.
Why do you think we as a country are so concentrated on statues and the racial fights that are breaking out now everywhere?
Well, I think a lot of it is that I think that, you know, during this whole presidential election that, you know, that we've seen some stuff happen in the primaries and things that we would have never, ever, ever expected to, you know, to be allowed.
Meaning?
Oh, well, I mean, incidents and stuff and language that was, you know, and things like that and...
Well, you think that amped it up. You don't think it existed before then.
I think it did, but I haven't seen it flare up as bad as I have the last, I don't know, probably 6 months or so.
So you think it all dates back to the election?
Not all of it, but, I mean, you know, some of it.
So what can we do to fix it, I guess, is where we all want to be.
That's the question, yeah. Well, like I say, I don't know, and I don't know that it would fix it, but maybe to go back to your previous question, maybe if an officer was disciplined or something like that, maybe that would.
Do you think we're going to see those days?
But I just don't think that we're going to, you know, with, for example, the guy in Arizona, Joe, getting pardoned. I mean, you know, thinking that type of mentality, people are thinking that these guys can get by with whatever.
Well, before we close out the hour, here's an interesting story. A former Ohio high school football player found guilty of raping a 16-year-old girl after an alcohol-fueled party 2 years ago. Returned to the field Tuesday with his old team. This boy's last name, Malik Richmond, played for the Steubenville High School in a scrimmage against Cambridge.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Richmond and fellow athlete Trent Myers were adjudicated delinquent in the August 2012 assault of a West Virginia girl. Richmond was sentenced to 1 year in juvenile detention, and Mays, who was found guilty of using his phone to take a naked picture of the underage girl, was sentenced to 2 years. Richmond, now 18, was classified as a Tier 2 sex offender. The school's football coach, Reno Sarskosia, said Richmond returned to school in January and was suspended from extracurricular activities for the remainder of the year. It was a horrible crime, but Richmond completed everything the judicial system asked of him. We won't deal in death sentences for juvenile activity, and I just feel he's earned a second chance, Sarkozy has said. What do you think here?
Yeah. Well, the story I heard about that was about the other gentleman that played for Youngstown State.
And what was that story?
Well, how the people at Youngstown State are upset because he made the football team, even though the coach said he did everything that he told him.
What was he guilty of?
The same thing. He was one of the guys in that.
The other guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they both have been convicted and served time on rape.
Mm-hmm. And I think he was a walk-on at Youngstown State, I believe. And
well, what do you think? Should they be allowed to play football?
Boy, that's a tough... I think once they're convicted, I mean, but they serve their time, though. But I just think it'd be impossible for them to ever play football again.
Well, do we ever give people a second chance?
Well, we are a nation of giving people second chances, though.
Well, some people, depends on who you are.
Yeah, yeah. Some people get third, fourth, and fifth, you know, fifth chances.
And some people don't.
And some people don't.
But I don't know. What do you think? Do you think the football players should be allowed to play football? Out there listening audience, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Maybe it's too soon is what the problem is. Can you imagine if you were the parents of one of these girls?
Right, right. Well, also, too, I look at it that way, then I kind of look at it the other way, too. Is this guy valuable to the school to help them win games? You know what I mean? Is that why... maybe they want him to play.
Well, I'm sure that's why they want him to play. Yeah. I mean, you got to make the football team there. I don't think there's any doubt there.
Right.
But should that be allowed?
Sometimes, sometimes they sacrifice that, you know, for the for what happened. I mean,
I think that's what's going on.
Yeah.
But is it right?
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's not necessarily right, but sometimes they get pressure from boosters and things. You know what I'm saying? So they have to, because it's all about winning and that kind of stuff. And
yeah, but the question is, should they be allowed? I mean, the principal, the superintendent should ultimately have the final say here, not the football coach.
Well, and I just think that kind of whatever decision the principal makes, I think he's going to be, you know, they're going to be under fire for it.
Well, that's fine, but what is the right decision?
I don't know if they're, you know, I would personally say that they shouldn't be allowed to play.
You don't think they should be allowed to play football?
Right.
Because?
Because of the crime that they committed. I mean, even though they've served their time and everything, the crime they committed, you know, I just think they shouldn't.
What do you think out there, listening audience? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. We'd love to hear your opinion on this. Should the football players be allowed to play football even though they have served time and been convicted of sex offenses, I guess is what it would be. And it's two of them are happening here in Ohio, one in college, one in high school. But see, the other side of that is, are you ever rehabilitated? Do you ever get a chance to go back and lead a normal life, or do you have to live with the one mistake all your life?
Well, public opinion is you're going to have to carry this for the rest of your life.
Well, that's right. We're talking about it.
Yeah.
They got put back on the team, and but they're being
brought up in public. But, of course, your debt to society, you know, I mean, but according to the court of law, is that you've already paid that debt.
Right. But I'm guessing they would not be allowed to work any place where you would have a felony. Aren't these felony offenses?
That's correct, yeah.
But they can play football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's where it comes in. I don't know.
So it's all about the winning and the losing.
I think ultimately that's kind of what it comes down to is.
But should it?
No. Of course you want to do what's right, you know, for.
What do you think out there, listeners? 740-383-9944. We'd love to hear from you. 740-383-9944. Adam Lepp called in the other day before we move on past this statue thing, and he said he felt that the statues might stay up because Robert E. Lee had done some good things in his life. Well, isn't this the same kind of thing with the football players? I'm sure they've done some good things. They're good football players. Maybe they are good students, nice people, but they have this one bad blemish on their record. Mm-hmm. Does that bad blemish outweigh the good?
Right.
That's what you have to wonder.
That's what you have to, yeah.
Go ahead, caller. Caller, are you there?
I'm assuming you're talking about the statues, yes?
Yeah, we are.
Okay. Then I'm going to say no, because if we're going to start tearing down specifically, then we're going to have to tear them all down.
Well, no, we're not, because
and
here's...
where do we stop?
I can tell you. I'll tell you where we stop.
There's a statue of Lenin out in California that really needs to go because he's got... because he has nothing to do with American politics at all.
Well, let me get this in really quick, because we're a minute and a half and we're going to break. So I hope you call back at a quarter after the next hour. But here's where the line is drawn. People keep saying that, where do we draw the line? It's very simple. Does the person have any largely redeeming facts? Because the thing I keep hearing is Washington, Jefferson, yes, they owned slaves, and yes, they did. But Washington was also the leader of the Revolutionary Army that freed this country. He was also the first president who didn't set us up like a monarchy. And he was also somebody who was a great war general on our side. Thomas Jefferson, president, one of the main... architects of the Declaration of Independence, who left room in the Declaration of Independence to amend it to allow African Americans to be part of it. Did he own slaves? Yes, he did, but that's not why we honor him. Robert E. Lee, treasonous to this country, killed slaves, burned more red, white, and blue flags than probably anybody in the history of the country. wanted to get rid of the Declaration of Independence for the rules of the Confederacy. What are his good points?
No, you were having this conversation about what he did before he became commander of the Army of Virginia.
Right.
Because that's originally where he started.
Right.
But he participated in the Mexican-American War of 1846 to 1848.
Yes, but...
And he was the colonel in the American Army.
Right, but we're...
offered the position of general, which he turned down, because that means he would have to go against his home state, who had seceded.
Right, but let me get... Because we got to go to break here, but were George Washington or Thomas Jefferson ever convicted of treason? Did they ever burn the American flag? Did they ever try to perpetuate slavery when the country was trying to get rid of it?
Let me think about that for a minute.
We got to go to break, but we're going to be back from break in 15 minutes talking about the same thing, so I hope you call back in.
All right.
We'll be back in 15 minutes.
In store for your big acceptance speech Thursday night.
Well, before I get to that, I have to talk about your terrible, terrible, terrible Governor John Kasich.
Oh, no.
I think what he's doing is terrible.